Hello, this is Eric Sinrod at Duane Morris in San Francisco, and I'm joined by my partner. Introduce yourself.
I'm Jonathan Armstrong. I'm speaking to you live from the UK.
And we're here with our weekly Tech Law 10. We're trying to bring you current on where information technology and the law intersects. So, Jonathan, I know you were quoted recently in the press with respect to the recent hacking and voluntary shutdown of the UK website for Lush. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, happy to. Lush have recently, they're a cosmetic and soap manufacturer and retailer with quite a following, I think, in the UK and of wider appeal. And they announced recently that any orders that were made between October 2010 and January 2011 may have been hacked, and they say that they've been targeted by a gang, and they decided to come clean on their website to their customers and tell their customers that their card details may have been compromised, and they had to go and check with their bank to check that fraudsters hadn't been using their account. And I thought it was quite an interesting announcement. They even had a section of their site, it's still up there, directed to the hacker. And the wording is, if you are reading this, our web time team would like to say that your talents are formidable. We would like to offer you a job were it not for the fact that your morals are clearly not compatible with ours or our customers. So Lush, in some respects, are taking the moral high ground with this. But I just have a worry as if that's not a position that they're not actually entitled to adopt. I mean, they say that the website was first hacked in October, and yet they tell the public about it in January. And it says that they're taking their website down because they refuse to put their customers at risk of another entry. But I'm just wondering if that actually does fly. I mean, in Europe, we have the PCI standards, so I know that you have those in the US as well. If you're taking credit card details from customers, then you have to go through some security procedures. And I'm wondering if they were PCI registered or if there's not more to this than meets the eye. Now, of course, in the UK, we have an obligation to hold people's data securely under the Data Protection Act. But I guess over there, Eric, it's very different because there are data breach rules in play, and they could potentially impact, could they, if any of the Lush customers were based in the U.S.? Could that happen?
Well, that's right. And in fact, you sort of danced around a question I was going to ask to you, and then I'll get back to yours to me. But that is, I mean, did Lush really do this voluntarily, or were they essentially compelled by existing rules to come clean to the public and their customers? I know you've talked about certain new rules that are being adopted in the U.K., and are those rules such they would have swept up this current situation that Lush found itself in, and it really wasn't so voluntary?
Well, I think that's probably true. There are two things, really, in the UK that I think are relevant. First of all, the Information Commissioner, our privacy regulator, is getting tougher on data security breaches, and they got new powers last year to increase the level of fines up to 500,000 sterling per breach, and they started using them in December. So first of all, we know that that this is something that's on the ICO's agenda, and there are rumors as we speak that there's a couple more ICO regulatory activities about to start or about to be announced under their new powers. And secondly, the rules on acting fairly with consumers have toughened up recently in Europe, and the relevant regulator there, the Office of Fair Trading, roughly equivalent to the Federal Trade Commission in the US, has also said that they're going to step up online activity. And by saying things like a lot of websites do, that your credit card details are secure and so on and so on, if they're not secure, you're likely to face action under those powers as well. So security is difficult, I think. Most websites, from my experience, make very ambitious claims about the security on their site. I've
right.
seen a number of clients who say, our website is 100% secure. And that just doesn't exist. That level of security doesn't exist in today's world.
Well, that's right. And so now bringing it back to this side of the pond, I mean, you make a good point there. I mean, if they're sort of hyped up representations in terms of ultra security on a website and they can't really fulfill those, I mean, in theory, you could get in trouble here with the Federal Trade Commission in terms of, you know, over-representing. In terms of, you know, data security breaches here, you know, we do have breach notification laws generally, you know, being adopted by the states. So at a state level, which can get complicated because, you know, where does one state's jurisdiction start and where does another one's end? You know, one of the more strict laws we've been seeing has been coming out of the state of Massachusetts. You know, plainly when customer data really is at risk, there is an onus to, you know, let the public know the status and what's being done and what can be considered. You know, it gets a little more touchy when perhaps there's been an intrusion on a website, but it doesn't necessarily look like a customer data has been compromised. You know, does a company then have a duty nevertheless to reveal what happened? And, you know, then the analysis could be, is it a, you know, good business decision? You know, what if it comes to light through the back door, there have been some incidents at a company's website, and the company didn't on its own come forward and explain that? You know, that could potentially be bad press for the company if they don't act proactively. So this is a new and emerging area that we have to think about. Do you have any thoughts on that, Jonathan?
I think you're right. I mean, from my experience of dealing with these breaches on behalf of clients, they become global instantly. And I think whilst it is good of Lush in some respects to sort of come clean and own up to customers, I'm not sure that that's anything more than their legal obligations. I mean, they're saying things like no stone will be unturned and we will study the results of a forensic investigation with great care. But I would be very surprised if there wasn't a regulator knocking on the door asking to see that investigative report as well. And as you rightly say, I think sometimes there is complexity if you're a global e-commerce operation because there are deadlines, obviously, under the U.S. Reporting obligations that you have, which I think, Eric, vary from state to state.
That's
and at the same time, the regulators in Europe, generally speaking, will want to hear from you before they read about it on a website. So I think it's a difficult situation, and I think the interaction of data protection laws here, data security laws there, and these transparency regulations is a challenge that a lot of businesses are going to have to face in the year ahead.
Well, let me plant one more seed before we finish because we're pushing up against our time limit. But, you know, we have very creative plaintiff attorneys in this country. And then the question arises, you know, when does a company and its website not only have responsibility for itself and its own customer data, but what about as to remote third parties? And the example would be, what if some rogue, you know, launches a distributed denial of service attack through a third party, what's called a zombie website, that then brings down yet another website? You know, if you didn't have sufficient protections on your site, on the zombie site, where the internet traffic, the bombardment passed through, do you have responsibilities when yet another website comes down? And we have, you know, theories of negligence in this country and foreseeability and, you know, potential duty to act, and we could see cases on that. I'm not necessarily saying those cases would have merit, but we have creative attorneys, and we've seen all sorts of lawsuits. So that being said, I think we're now at our limit, so perhaps we should sign off. We thank you for joining us here for our weekly Tech Law 10. Again, I'm Eric Sinrod in San Francisco. We have Jonathan Armstrong in London. You can track us at our Duane Morris website, duanemorris.com. We're both on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My email address is ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. And Jonathan, if you'd like to sign off for yourself.
Yeah, I'll just wash up by saying I'm at jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. And we look forward to speaking to you again next week. As ever, keep the comments coming. We're really grateful for them. Thanks for
listening. Thank you very much.